SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and second half on this Friday. Weekend preview, and really, Del Mar is the showcase of the weekend. And good action at Saratoga as well. The Diana on Sunday, the four-star Dave tomorrow. Today, we've got the Skidmore, and we'll do a little bit of review with Nick Tamaro, who joins us now. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Not bad. And I did want to mention, before I ask you for some recapping thoughts, I should mention from yesterday, the last stake of the steeplechase season, unfortunately, because of the way things have unfolded. And big congratulations to Leslie Young and the Bruton Street people that take down the New York Turf Riders Cup handicap. Rashawn at 8-1 was just absolutely terrific under Tom Garner, and Garner wins the Turf Riders for the second year in a row. It's Leslie's first, and it's Burton Street's first as well. Rashawn, the Manduro gelding, the eight-year-old, and really, you know, you didn't think that Optimus Prime or Moscato were in trouble. You know, during the running, they were in touch, but it was pretty notable on the backstretch when Darren Nagel started to ask, and when Mitchell started to ask, Optimus and Moscato respectively, they really did not seemingly, you know, get within striking distance even. And up front, Rashawn, who really just bided his time as the mayor, Prava Laguna, was setting the pace. And Rashawn, pretty much with authority at 8-1. So that was your Turf Rider. And next week, next Monday probably, we'll talk to Leslie. Delighted for her to win her first Turf Riders, and with husband Patty, you know, who of course was forced to retire after a very, very bad spill. And there were a lot of people touched by getting the chance to see Patty and Leslie in the winner's circle. The rest of the day, it included impressive maiden winner for Bass Stables and Todd Pletcher, the American Pharoah filly, Thankful, 4-5, and came a running, Nick. There's been not just the two-year-old maidens, there's been some good older maidens as well. And later on the card, what else? The stake result in the Tale of the Cat, Stan the Man, last to first under Rosario. And of course, we talked yesterday about the two-year-old. The two-year-old performance that Toby's Heart turned in. Nick, what about you? What do you think since we spoke last Saturday, of course, the Alabama and the two turf races for three-year-olds, etc.? Some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you did a pretty good job bringing some spice and excitement to what have been two relatively difficult cards to get overly excited about. They actually ended up playing out pretty well in terms of some of the multis, and really there was one price horse on each card the last 2 days. Wednesday it was Abiding Star, and then yesterday it was Wild William, and the pick five yesterday, I believe, paid $430, and on Wednesday afternoon, it paid $2,000, the late one. So I guess Big Elf Gal paid a little bit of a price in the nightcap. It actually opened 5-2 in there. So, you know, it's been a matter of just being able to make sure you don't zig when they zag and vice versa. But going back to last week, I think that we sort of foreshadowed on Friday that we'd know a little bit more about the Oaks picture after Swiss Skydiver competed in the Alabama, and she was about as good as we could have hoped, I would say, if not better, getting a 102 buyer speed figure figure. It's the highest buyer speed figure for an Alabama winner since 2012. Obviously, this Alabama takes on a completely different meaning, I guess, with the Kentucky Oaks still out there. And, you know, it's setting up a pretty awesome potential showdown between she and Gamine and Speech. And I say potential only because I feel like we talk about these all the time. And luckily, the Oaks and Derby have become such destination races that I think everybody will end up going there without any kind of issue. But I think that Swiss Skydiver brings in credentials that in a way would really make, she won't be favored, but in a way I kind of feel like she should be favored. And I think ultimately what your opinion is going to boil down to is how you feel about Kenny McPeak versus Bob Baffert, because I think that's going to be the biggest thing that Gamine has going for her, is that she's trained by Bob Baffert. I mean, clearly at a distance of 9 furlongs or more, even 8.5 furlongs or more, I think you'd favor Swiss Skydiver, if not potentially Speech, given the way Speech took it to Gamine at Oaklawn and stretched her right to the wire. So, yeah, it looks like it's going to be very, very interesting, and I think it's kind of the race that everybody's looking forward to. Maybe a little bit more so than the Derby, at least from my perspective. I think that 'Tis the Law is kind of a foregone conclusion, and I'm getting a little disappointed with the number of horses that are going to be running in there. Like, I don't want to rain on the Cheryl Spite parade, but running that horse 1.25 miles on the dirt in his third career start seems like an atrocious idea to me. I really think he's a good horse. I really, really like all the Fipke horses, and I hope that it ends up working out decently, but it seems like way too much too soon, which of course was always going to be a possibility with this late Derby. But back to Saratoga, Toby's Heart, I thought on Wednesday, was incredible, and I think Toby's Heart's a really cool horse. I was a big Jack Milton fan, so seeing him have a nice horse in one of his early crops, I think this is his second crop, or maybe she was part of his first crop. This is his second year with horses on the track. She was great. You know, she rallied down the middle of the track in a race with absolutely no pace. Beautiful ride by Ricardo Santana on the eventual second place finisher, and Jose Ortiz rode with a lot of confidence, which he's doing on a daily basis, and it shows. And that's why he's been able to stick with his brother in the standings. So I think today's card is a little bit better than we've seen the last few days. Obviously, trying to navigate these last few weeks with the population sitting a little bit, it'll be interesting for the racing office, but I think eights on weekdays and nines on Sundays will probably help. So I think there's still plenty of interesting action coming up.
Agreed. I mean, there'll be some you know, narrow fields here and there, and you know, as you mentioned, you know, you go back to Abiding Star, Ned Allard coming up, and whenever he has, there was a lesson there, and I was shaking my head watching it. I happened to have been on track at that time. I had to run over, and I'm watching the race, and I knew on the backstretch, I said, oh my God, he's going to win this race, and I'm a chicken in a pot, and I'm a big Ned Allard fan, and every time he's dipped this horse down into claiming ranks, the horse has responded and completely missed it. I mean, that was, I felt like a dummy, because I like the horse a lot.
Yeah, I used him as a backup, and it probably worked out better. I had Financial System roughly for 3 times as much, which is not that much, given their respective price differences. Of course, it did enable everybody to, and I'm not going to say unjustifiably, but because I certainly complain about rider tactics quite a bit, and it did look a little odd that McCarron was ridden so passively. I guess Todd Pletcher said afterwards, they mentioned on the Fox broadcast, that he left the decision on what to do with McCarron up to Irad, and he decided to rate him. And that enabled Abiding Star to get free and clear. And Abiding Star's a fast horse, too. So he's danced a lot of dances. He's been in some races with exceptionally fast paces. I felt like it at this stage of their careers, respectively, Abiding Star is faster on paper. McCarron is not the front-running turf sprint type that he was for Jason Service. He's a horse whose speed, I think, has been dulled a bit. So I'm not terribly surprised that ended up happening. And, of course, he ended up getting the trip that Jose Ortiz really was known for when he first got going as a bug, and then early on as a journeyman, he would put just about everything on the lead, and he was very, very good at it. And it's one skill that he still has and uses to his benefit quite frequently.
Some good sequences and spots here and there to dive in, and that includes this weekend. I've mentioned Nick. I'll remind and give everybody the sequence again. The cross country, you know, because everybody that's doing Del Mar, I'm going to certainly do the Del Mar card tomorrow from an opinion standpoint, and the late pick five at Saratoga, actually the pick six, because you're going to have to look at this race five, which starts the Empire Six, and it's the first leg of the cross country, and then the four-star Dave, and then the next three, the Del Mar Handicap, the Del Mar Oaks, and the Pacific Classic. So races 7, 9, 10 from Del Mar. So this is a long, usually they try to truncate the cross-country pick 5 to about 90 minutes. In this particular case, it starts at 3:28 in the afternoon and it ends at 9:30 at night.
So. Yeah, it's this period of time between when it starts and ends is about as long as it would take to fly from Saratoga to Del Mar. But it's pretty funny. And I guess it was, I think it was last week or the week before, that I think they all went off in an hour. And yeah. So it was like the old days of the, it's almost sort of like the Stronach 5 still is. It generally goes off in about an hour. But yeah, this one, they did the same thing last year. And I remember I was alive and I used Higher Power and a couple of the horses, just a shameless red board on my part. But I completely forgot that I was alive and went and looked later and was like, oh, okay. So yeah, glad that that ended. It ended favorably for once. I think it was the only ticket I cashed during Saratoga and Del Mar last year. So no big surprise there. But yeah, looking at that fifth, it's a good, it looks like a good competitive race on paper. There's some interesting pedigrees. Obviously, Sifting Sands for Chad Brown is going to be, should be the pretty solid favorite. David Aragona installed him at 5-2 on the morning line. He's a son of Dubow. He's a half to Legatissimo, who was a multiple Group 1 winner in Europe. People might remember that she was favored in the 2015 Fillion Mare Turf, which of course ironically was won by Chad Brown with Stephanie's Kitten. And he has been training with Public Sector, who won last week. And the funny thing about Public Sector is that if you are a DRF Workout Report subscriber, which I think if you're playing the races at Saratoga seriously, or Del Mar for that matter, you need to be, the workouts were not strong on Public Sector. They were actually a lot stronger on the favorite in that race, whose name I believe was Polynesia, who was also a Chad Brown trainee owned by Peter Brandt, and the Public Sector may have gone off a slight favorite, but they were co-favorites, more or less. And I think the important thing to remember there is that these European horses, even though they've been brought to America, and obviously this horse has been in America for quite some time, I don't believe that they train the way a lot of our horses do. So anyway, Sifting Sand seemed to be training well with Public Sector, actually got marked as having outworked him a couple of times. So I think Sifting Sands will be very tough to beat. Interestingly, this race is on the inner as opposed to the Mellon. So I think being drawn inside is a big, big deal because there's going to be a fan out around the first turn like you've never seen. Nautilus is the only experienced turf runner that gets a look, I think, although he comes out of what looked like a very weak race. And Rock Sugar and Rip It both came out of there and didn't perform particularly well next time. I thought the interesting horse moving to the turf was Win From Within, Son of Into Mischief, who's, of course, his horses went on every surface, but 14% overall in turf debuts. The Dam was a turf winner. The Dam is also a half to Shaquise, who was a very nice turf horse for Kieran McLaughlin and Chadwell. And Todd Pletcher over the last 5 years, this number surprised me. Dirt to turf, stretching out two-year-olds at Saratoga. He's 5-14 with a 309 ROI. And gone are the days of Todd putting horses on the turf who simply couldn't run on the dirt. And Win From Within, I thought, had a bit of a trouble trip on debut. Didn't run particularly well last time, but he also didn't run that bad. And that looked like the most loaded maiden race of the meet so far. So I think there's reason to believe he can improve. Now, one other pedigree note, Snow's Island is a son of Animal Kingdom, out of Tutti Paesi, which is a super Team Valor pedigree. Yep. They, of course, owned Animal Kingdom, and Valor Ladies owned Tutti Paesi, who was trained by Graham Motion until he split with Team Valor and then was trained by Bill Mott, and she won multiple stakes races on the turf, banked almost $600,000. This is a horse that seems to be, has been in training for a while already, but Graham Motion has really awful numbers with two-year-olds in turf routes on debut, so this horse may end up needing one. And I think actually one more, What Makes Sammy Run is by Wemyss Arty, sold for a relatively modest amount at the Ocala sale in June, but he's a half to Shakamot. So right. There's the Roger Atfield angle, of course, there, and this is a horse who's been training on the turf as well, so you'll want to take a look at the workout reports. But, I mean, I think most of the action is going to go through Sifting Sands. I would say Win From Within is the other horse that you'd want to use prominently.
Have you read What Makes Sammy Run?
I have not.
Highly recommended, the Bud Schilberg book about a young, how do we describe him? Somewhat corrupt and, not somewhat corrupt, a scheming hopeful that escapes New York to go to Hollywood and makes a success out of himself using every possible scheme you can imagine. A very, very good book. Bud Schulberg, a favorite of mine and a blacklisted writer, and What Makes Sammy Run also was turned into a musical on Broadway. I'm very curious about Sterling Racing. What made them name this cult? What Makes Sammy Run? Very interesting to me. But so there you go. There's today's literary aside.
Absolutely, very and a good one, a strong one. I think that I'll have my game ready next week or at a different time to catch you, but it's going to be tough.
Do we want to concentrate on the pick five first and then fill in any blanks? Four-star game?
Sure. The first is the other two-year-old race. It's definitely the less interesting of the two-year-old races on the card. The one Foliage is a half to Lee, and it's a Claiborne horse, actually, with Al Stahl, and we see that the Claiborne and Al Stahl are back together, at least in a small part compared to where they were. But, the four-star Dave, is clearly the signature race on the program, and it's a part of a pick-five sequence. It looks like it's going to have a couple of sub-even money shots, so it's good that this race looks very, very wide open on paper. And, I guess there's a couple of things that you have to decide what you want to do in this race. And one of them is, it's very clear to me that Halliday is going to be in front. And when Todd Pletcher was interviewed yesterday on Saratoga Live, he made it clear that they sort of overthought things in the Bernard Baruch and believed that there was some speed, anti-speed bias on the turf that I heard a lot of chatter about through 2 weeks. That sounded like the handiwork of social media. And then, of course, they took a horse with a lot of natural speed and sat behind a horse that also has a lot of natural speed and watched some like an Hot Brown go wire to wire. And when Halliday has lost, that actually has generally been the issue, is that he's been ridden too passively. When he's been put on the lead, he's actually done quite well throughout his career and really only has one blemish when he's had the lead at every call. The English Channel was a race where he nearly had the lead at every call. And, of course, he got run down by Size McWave and Front Run the Fed, who are both, legitimate grade 2, grade 3 caliber horses. I don't really trust him, and so I think that's why I wouldn't end up picking him. I definitely will use him. I think you'd be very foolish not to. He's a horse with a lot of talent, and obviously Luis Saez is riding extremely well right now. He's doing something crazy, which is he's putting speed horses on the lead, and it's amazing how well it's working out. He could almost teach like a short course for some of his colleagues on it, and they'd be amazed at how well, when you put horses like Wild William and 3.99, Foolish Ghost on the lead and let them do their thing, they actually end up faring quite well. I thought that of the... I've grown totally weary of Without Parole. I think he's a horse that... I think he's a bit of a refuser. I don't know if he wants to win. I thought that he was too close to the pace, too, back in the Shoemaker Mile. I thought he was much too far back in the Maker's Mark Mile. But he seems like he's just always wanting in the final furlong. And those kind of horses, to me, just never break through. I thought that of the horses that you could make an excuse for last time, the clearest excuse you could make was for Uni, who was racing on a course that was less than firm. She also was stuck behind a slow pace with a really good horse on the lead. She had to move a lot earlier than she probably wanted to or is at her best doing, and that ended up making her a little short late. The other thing is that this is a horse who was put in a very aggressive placement off the layoff, and if you look back at her seasonal debuts the last 2 years, they were just ho-hum efforts, all things considered. I mean, her Perfect Sting, she did get a 99 buyer last year, but of course she was running down Mrs. Ramona G and Belleve, and the year before that in Plenty of Grace, she beat her stablemate 55, but it was hardly one of her better efforts on the year. So I think she's a horse that races herself into shape. I think second off the layoff, she'll be set for a much bigger effort. But I got to tell you, I was stunned to see Joel Rosario not riding her. And I don't know what the angle is. I don't know if this was a decision that he made or that Chad Brown made. But, he stayed home to ride her and didn't go ride Tom's d'Etat in the Foster, probably understanding he was getting Tom's d'Etat anyway, but you'd wonder why he would opt for Raging Bull having won a Breeders' Cup on Uni. That being said, I'm not too disturbed by Jose Ortiz getting on board. I think she's the one to beat. I think she'll probably end up going off the second choice. You know, the other thing, and we'll see a lot about the workout reports, is got Stormy finished? You know, and I thought turning for home in the poker that she might kick away from that field like she did in a couple of races last year where she ran very well, because all things considered, she had a pretty soft trip stalking a moderate pace. And then she came up, she sort of went through the final furlong and a half like she has now three times this year, where she's just looked like a shell of herself. So we'll see if maybe she can bounce back. It would certainly be a breakthrough win for this barn. And you know, you're going to get a decent enough price. You're probably going to get 8 or 10 to 1, because I could see probably five horses in here that are going to get bet before her. The only other one I would mention in terms of maybe a bit of an outsider that you might want to throw in as a backup, there are a lot of different ways that Chad Brown could have gone with Valid Point. And he's a horse that Chad Brown has seemingly been very fond of. And he had no chance in the poker. He was jammed inside the entire way down the stretch. Never really got a chance to run. I've never been a big fan of his. But the thing is, he's probably getting a first-over trip stalking just off of Halliday and got Stormy. And that's going to give him the jump potentially on some of the late runners like Uni, Raging Bull, and Without Parole. And that might be the kind of trip that could make him a little bit dangerous. So I would say that if you have an opinion in the cross-country pick five and later on, you know, you like United or Maximum Security, then perhaps you can use some backup. And he might be one of them.
I'm glad you stressed it, because he does feel like you know, that stranger that you kind of gloss over, and then in deep stretch, you if you could be in the grandstand, you feel like jumping off. I felt the same way, that he was a curiosity. So nice. Do you want to hit the the three Del Mar races?
Oh, no, Brad Free did an excellent job on those. I would encourage everybody to go back and listen. I've not had I just took a basic glance. We can go through the late pick five at Saratoga, which would probably be a better use of any.
Okay, then real quick, let's.
Slight talent,
all right.
I have. Yeah.
All right, then let's back it up to the. What, to the sixth?
Right, to the sixth. Yeah, low-level New York bred maiden claimers. It looks like the race is mainly between a couple of experienced horses like Central Exit and Love Me Tomorrow, both of whom have some question marks. I thought that Vanita kind of fit the profile of a horse that won earlier at this meet for Tom Alvetrani and Kendrick Carmouche, second-time starter that didn't have any kind of huge trouble on debut, but probably needed a race. This is a barn whose horses generally get better with experience. The blinkers are going on, so felt like she could improve enough to be a threat, and is certainly going to be a pretty big price. The seventh race looks like Lonesome Fugitive's race to lose. He was unfortunate in terms of losing last time, given that he got way too far back of a supersonic pace when the front runner ran off. Now the blinkers are going on, I think, to try and keep him a little bit more engaged early, and that will certainly help his chances. But he's a horse that I thought came back after debuting at Gulfstream with a really good effort at Belmont, and certainly validated it at Saratoga. The best alternative might be his stablemate Assiduously, who showed increased speed last time and actually ran really well behind No Word and Shamrock. And No Word came back and for a few strides in mid-stretch of the Saratoga Derby looked like he could get the job done. So that I think he makes enough sense as a possible horse to use with Lonesome Fugitive. The ace is going to boil down to Growth Engine and the entry. And Blue It is obviously the stronger of the entry, moving back to the dirt off a try on the turf in the Lubash. Growth Engine's a horse that's obviously had a bunch of problems, but when he runs, he's good. And his comeback race, albeit against a much weaker field, was very impressive. And, you know, this is a horse that obviously there was some expectation for. He didn't sell for very much, given his pedigree. Obviously, he's ouchy, so that comes as no huge surprise, but he's a horse, I think, with upside, and if he gets some pace to run at, which he should, given that Seafoam is signed up as well as It's All Relevant, then I think that could help his chances pretty significantly. And then closing it out in the nightcap, Of course, I mean, all of our hearts are going to be with Kid Chocolate, who actually ran a very, very good race last time, closing into a slow pace and having had trouble going to the first turn. Ironically, Manny Franco is back on, of course, which is a good thing given the way he rode him two back. But I think Manny was culprit for some of the trouble that he had last time. So
yeah,
I think he's dangerous. I would definitely use him. I would obviously use Letterman as well, considering I think we're now at the point where you're using every Jimmy Bond horse. They've all run well and continue to. And then, you know, it boils down to what you want to do with a horse like Raquise. Obviously, Chad Brown is trying to win as many races as possible. He wants to win the trainer title. And Raquise is a horse that I think under some circumstances he would probably run in a one other than. But he's in for 40 because he's probably not quite that caliber. And he knows he'll get claimed and he'll probably win. So he is a deserving favorite and is part of a pick five that, again, has a couple of races that look like they're going to go to short prices. So luckily that four-star Dave and maybe if you have a decent enough opinion against a horse like Lonesome Fugitive or in the first leg as alternatives to Central Exit and Love Me Tomorrow, you can get a little bit of value.
I agree. And those are, yeah, that's what I've got. Did you include Battalion?
No, I didn't include Battalion, and I should include Battalion. He's obviously worth mentioning. The second to Winning Factor looks like a better effort now, although I will say that Winning Factor really did all the running in that race. And you know, I was kind of kicking myself on Sunday when he beat Lahara, who was a horse who I think you really wanted to try and find an alternative to. Because when Winning Factor won that second race back on opening weekend, on opening Saturday, Jose Ortiz was getting interviewed afterwards, and he said, there was a comment made to him about the ride, and he said, the ride was terrible, the horse overcame it. And he was right. And it was one of those times where he was actually being very, very honest. And not that he's a liar or anything, but you know, you're getting a very transparent comment on his part. And he was right. I mean, it was a bad ride. And Winning Factor obviously was a horse that's improved a ton. And it was a great day for Dave Donk. But that being said, Battalion is a horse I think that's getting better as well. And he closed into a slow pace two back at Gulfstream and didn't disgrace himself at all last time. So ended up getting scratched from a race last week to go here. That was a starter. This is a 42 life. So it does tell you a little bit maybe about what where Mott wants him class-wise.
Yeah, fair enough. And so, and of course, the other horse to consider, you mentioned Donk and Cataract that ran with Kid 2 weeks ago in that and was chasing home the very cleverly placed Brittany Russell winner in our race. So Kid has done great coming out of it. And we were going to wait until closing weekend. There's another 40 non-2, but Kid's done so well. Gary said, you know, they're putting on a 40 non-2 for Saturday. So there we are. So looking forward to being there. We got some of the partners coming in as well. And Jay Pridman's joining us here in a second. But Nick, looking ahead to the Diana at all, did you look that field over that came together?
Yeah, you know, it's a good bunch, and it's obviously going to be interesting to see if Sister Charlie bounces back. I think she will, and I think one of the things to remember about her last start, the Boston Spa, was that that came during a stretch where Chad Brown's barn was basically just as cold as it's ever been. And so I think she more than likely needed the race, and I don't know if she's quite the same as she was when she won this race a year ago, but I know that her best is a lot better than any of the best of these horses that she's facing. The horse that I think that you're supposed to completely dismiss that's going to be bet in there is Mean Mary, just dressed up as a horse could possibly be, and I don't think she's likely to get the lead. I think Rushing Fall will be ridden forwardly, and that should be a pretty big problem for Mean Mary, who's had things really go her way. But we'll see. I mean, I also can't ever discount the Canadian sensation Starship Jubilee, who seems to perform every time she goes to the post.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the best stories you're ever going to find, given that she was claimed and what she's done since she was claimed. And I find it particularly ironic and funny that she was claimed from Jorge Navarro and has done all that she's done since then.
Yeah, it's a great story, and we had fun with Attard off the win, and he's got a hat full of other nice horses. Nick, good luck this weekend. Nick's analysis, of course, brought to you by Naira Betts Daily at our website, and the link also at Naira Betts as well. And we'll look forward to talking to Nick next week. And right now, we'll stay right here at just a little past the top of the hour. Jay Pridman standing by. It's been a busy week on the Derby Watch front. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And we've, in passing, as the morning's gone on, we've touched on some of the Derby Watch news. Why don't you bring everybody up to speed on some of the horses that have taken a pass, some that are still considering, and everything else?
Well, as of Wednesday, I had 21 horses still under consideration for the race, with a couple of those not certain to run, one of whom is Money Moves, who would currently be ranked 21st on that 21-horse list. He doesn't have any points. He's probably going to end up running in the Jim Dandy anyway, but in theory, if a horse above him drops out, he could get in. He and Cheryl Spite both have 0 points, but Cheryl Spite ends up being ranked higher of the two, owing to having more earnings in non-restricted stakes races, so which is the tiebreaker. So that's what puts him into the race. The most recent and final race of this 11-month elongated process was the Pegasus last week at Monmouth, and the 1-2 finishers from that race are both going to pass. Pneumatic is going to, the winner is going to go to the Preakness, and the runner-up, Jesus's Team, is going to run in the Jim Dandy, which looks like it'll have a fairly decent field. So that's where that stands at the moment.
Excellent. There was also a number of jock assignments, and there's really only, I mean, of those that are committed, I guess Dr. Post, we're still waiting for a decision from Team Pletcher.
Right, and he's a horse, so I think he'll end up running in the race, but he's still not 100% certain to run. I think he'll end up running, but they've been a little bit on the fence about him. But I think the intention is to run. Adam Vicenza picked up Enforceable this past week. Santana's going to ride Max Player. That was kind of expected when Rosario chose to remain in New York. It just and that horse moved to Asmussen. It just seemed to make sense that that's who would end up there. Julian Leperoux ends up on Storm the Court. So those are some of the moves that have been made in the past week. Miguel Mena is going to ride Necker Island. All of that's been announced in the last couple of days. Like you said, there's still a few that are open at the moment, but not many. Most of the blanks have been filled in, but with guys like the two Ortiz brothers and Rosario and Pratt not going, normally guys like that would be there not only to ride the Derby or the Oaks, but all the other big races that they usually have, and it's just a slightly different schedule. But most, the biggest reason is because of the rules that are in place at Del Mar and Saratoga regarding if you leave, you can't come back. So you'd be giving up not only, obviously, Oaks and or Derby Day, but you can't come back and ride the last 2 days of those meets, which close on Labor Day, which is 2 days after Derby Day. So that's the reason that, unless you've got a top mount, guys like that are probably better off with all the big races those final weekends at those respective tracks just staying home. If you're Manny Franco, or Mike Smith, you're going to the Kentucky Derby. But to go there to ride a 50-to-1 shot doesn't seem like a good business move.
And it's going to be, it's also going to be notable, Jay, looking at, the full slate of stakes, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that, there are probably going to be some guys getting chances on stake horses, for that they haven't ridden before. There will be, some of that, undoubtedly, because we haven't really had it. We've been so focused on getting through these point races and wrapping up that portion of it that, we haven't had as much of the, the undercard discussions and a feel for, the rest of the action. But it's still going to be the same Oaks Derby undercards that, that are always chock full of intrigue.
To a point. I mean, there's a couple of those kinds of races that aren't being run, and the purses aren't exactly the same, but you're right. Your overall point's right. You're going to have guys who normally wouldn't get chances who are going to get chances because some of those big names aren't coming in for the weekend.
Well, we'll start to look toward those, and we'll look at the Churchill notes, and I'm sure that Kevin Kirstein and Darren have got some of those coming together, and Ben Huffman's racing office putting together the cards. I mean, it's coming up fast. Any other Derby watch hot and not notations to touch on?
Not really. I mean, we know who wants to run and who doesn't, and you know, there's a few that have enough points that want to go on, even though their form's horrendous. But you know, so I guess the Derby still has allure to horses that finished seventh and you know lesser stakes in their last couple starts. So good luck to them. That's why I admire people like the Jesus' team group for putting the horses' interests instead of their own in front of their own.
Well done. Well said. Jay, let's turn our attention to a big weekend at Del Mar. And you worked on a lot of advances, the hot and heavy stake action on Saturday. Also, Rancho Bernardo kicks things off today into the weekend. And I suppose we should talk about the feature first and the Pacific Classic, always one of, if not the highlight of the season at Old Del Mar.
Yes, it's an intriguing race. When you've got the likes of Maximum Security and Midcourt meeting anew, and you've got Higher Power going back out to a distance that I think is far more suitable for him, a mile and a quarter. He's just a much more, you look at his form, he's just much more effective at a mile and a quarter, and obviously being the defending race winner, I think you'll see a much better performance from him than you did in the San Diego. So, I'm really looking forward to that race. It's always the highlight of the meet, even with the small field that it's going to have this year. And I will say that Maximum Security is definitely trained a lot more forwardly coming out of the San Diego. I remember talking with you on the eve of the San Diego about it. It was just hard to get a line on him because he was really the kind of horse that just didn't train with enthusiasm in the mornings. He doesn't really wow you with his works. But he's definitely picked up his game. It's almost like needed the cobwebs shaken loose in the San Diego,
sure.
And he's definitely trained a lot better coming out of that race. He's certainly undergoing a much different training regimen in his current barn than in the previous one where he would, go a half and 54 or whatever. So it's very different styles of training.
Well, and a couple of times this morning already, we've kind of touched on the mile and a quarter and, what it means to, to him versus Midcourt and Higher Power in terms of, the polish and Higher Power, last year's performance, which, was really the coming out party for him. Given the San Diego, which I don't think it's unfair to say it was a disappointing outing for him.
Yeah, but tell me when he's ever been effective at a mile and a 16th.
Fair. Absolutely.
First time caller, long time listener, I'll hang up and listen out there. Let me look that up. It's just not, it was a means to an end.
Yeah.
He's back at a distance that he's much better at. I mean, his last 3 mile and a quarter races were the Pacific Classic, a third in the Breeders' Cup Classic behind Vino Rosso and McKenzie, and then a second in the Hollywood Gold Cup behind Improbable, who, you could make the argument it might be the best older horse in the country at the moment.
Yes.
So that's really good form, and he'll be much better going out to a mile and a quarter.
Exactly, and that's the that's the intrigue here, and the matchup essentially. excuse me. The Pacific Classic, 9:30 Eastern kickoff time. Jay, touch on some of the other elements of the day that you did advances on, including the Oaks, which is just terrific. Certainly the Del Mar Handicap as well came up great.
Well, which one do you want me to talk about?
We'll work backwards from the Pack Classic, and the Oaks goes as the ninth.
The Pack Classic. I never heard it like that. Interesting name. So the Oaks is the other Grade One race on the card, it's I think it's a pretty wide open race. Obviously, Laura's Light is the tepid favorite in the race. I really admire her. She's 5-for-7 lifetime. You know, I think she's better at a mile than at a mile and an eighth, but she did win the Honeymoon going a mile and an eighth, and she's just a tenacious little filly. I mean, she's very tough to get by, and I think she'll run another strong race tomorrow in the Del Mar Oaks. But the horse I'm really intrigued by is the French filly that's coming in for Richard Mandela, Miss Extra. I thought her form in France was quite good earlier this year, including a victory against males in her first start of the year. It was a handicap race, but she moved in quickly into stakes racing. She won a Group 2, and then, you know, her most recent start, she ran against the best fillies over there in the French Oaks, probably at a distance slightly beyond optimum for her, and obviously against much better competition that she's going to be in against tomorrow. And I think coming over here fresh off the plane, and I think getting some class relief is going to make her very formidable in that race.
It's nice that we get the addition of a couple of European imports too. Neige Blanche for Leonard Powell intrigues as well. It was a good group domestically, and it's enhanced by the imports. And of course, Powell also has got Gwitty coming off that nice try in the San Clemente as well at a big price.
Right. I mean, that was a pretty exciting race. You know, she ran well. Warren Showtime is obviously a really hard-knocking filly in this context, and she switches to Mike Smith. So it's a good race, but I like, you know, obviously Laura's Light, but I think Miss Extra is very intriguing in here.
Work backwards, Jay, the Del Mar Handicap.
We're reading it like it's Hebrew. We're going right to left. So we've got, so speaking of Mandela, obviously the Del Mar Handicap goes through United, 8-5 on the morning line, I would imagine, shorter at post time. A big field, but, you know, not a field, I think, with a whole lot of depth. You know, United's form is he's just gone kind of from strength to strength this year after, you talk about a coming out party, you know, his was certainly the Breeders' Cup turf when he gave a scare to Bricks and Mortar, almost upsetting him at 51-1. And this year he's won all three of his starts. And I just think he's better at a mile and a quarter, at a mile and three eighths, than he is at a mile and an eighth. And to me, if they couldn't beat him last time when he shortened up to the Eddie Reed, you know, good luck tomorrow. It's not a very intriguing race from a gambling standpoint for me. But in terms of the sequential wagers, it's just hard for me to get around him. I just don't think there's anybody else in here who's good enough to beat him, barring something, you know, completely unforeseen happening, like him just getting totally stopped in traffic or something like that. You know, one horse in here who's got good form, but I don't think is going to be served by going out this far as Originaire. I've just always thought he was better at a mile than at longer distances. And he did run well in the Whittingham behind United and Rock Emperor back on May 23rd. But he's just always struck me as a horse who wants pace in front of him. And that's just not going to happen going a mile and three eighths. I think he's better when you can hold him up and blast home. And, you know, like when he won in a second level allowance race earlier this year at Santa Anita, or, you know, even in the Mathis Brothers Mile last December, he didn't win it, but he got pace and he ran into it. I think that's what he wants to do, and he's a horse that I think is going to get some play in here because he's got decent form, having run against United in his last couple starts. And I like him because he runs well each time. I just don't think he's going to be as effective going that far.
Fair enough. The Green Flash and the Torrey Pines as well. Any thoughts there?
Well, the Torrey Pines, I don't think, really came up all that strong a race. You know, I wish this race had been moved to
to earlier in the meet, kind of like the shared belief was. I think you might have had a chance of getting a better field if it had been positioned as a race that had points towards the Kentucky Oaks. But while Del Mar wanted to move the shared belief and make it a Derby prep, they really didn't want to do that with this race. And so you've got some horses here who are more late-developing types and might be better on down the line, but there's nobody here who at the moment is a top-notch, you know, grade one kind of filly. Maybe they've got that potential. Certainly Harvest Moon has run well in her two-turn races on dirt after making a grass debut, and she's probably the horse to beat. And I think Secret Keeper will do well on the stretch-out. I think up to a mile, mile and a 16th, she'll be fine, but I don't know that this field is, you know, is that strong when you look at the quality of some of the three-year-old fillies out here. But you know, the best ones are obviously looking towards the Kentucky Oaks. You know, horses like Gamine and Speech and Donna Veloci are all based out here, but none of them are obviously running in this race because they're pointing for races at Churchill Downs in a couple of weeks. And then you've got the Green Flash, which... that came up an interesting race. I mean, the turf sprints are always a pretty good division out here. I'm really intrigued by Chaos Theory. I think this is a very interesting claim for Sadler. I don't know why this horse was risked for a tag, but he's trained great since Sadler acquired him. Back in June, he was stabled there. He had some horses at Churchill Downs, so he claimed the horse with designs on the turf sprint division. In California, there's just a lot of opportunities for a horse like this out here, and he had some back class, and his work last week, his final work for this race, which was last Sunday morning, was really impressive. I mean, he really caught the eye going around the course last Sunday morning, and to me, sitting on a really, really top race. The horse drawn to the outside, Mike's Tisnow, is obviously the horse to beat. He's just a really classy turf sprinter from Northern California. He's a little bit fragile. He's had a lot of interruptions to his career, and you know, last time came off of a layoff of a year, almost to the day, and won. And just, I was talking to his trainer Andy Mathis the other day, and he was joking. He said, "You know, coming back in 2.5 months might be a little quick for him because he's run really well off year layoffs a couple times in his career." But he's a fast horse, and going 5/8, he's going to have to be caught. So that's kind of a fun race, but I like Chaos Theory in there.
And Jay, should ask you about the fillies that'll be in the opener, 5 o'clock first post, and there's certainly, from a pedigree standpoint, some very notable horses in here. And there's the $1.3 million Princess Noor from the Clip and Save column. Talk about the two-year-olds.
Right, so Princess Noor was in my pre-meet story of two-year-olds to watch. She wasn't named at the time. I just mentioned that, you know, there was a Baffert filly by Not This Time out of She's a Smoke Show who was worth watching because she had cost a lot of money at OBS, and she had come right in and trained well initially when she first got to Santa Anita, and that training has continued here at Del Mar. She's really impressed, and she'll be south of 2-1, her morning line price. I mean, she's really caught the eye of everybody out here. She's extremely highly regarded, and she's, you know, I don't know if, you know, 5.5 might be a little abrupt for her, but she's very good, and I'm looking forward to seeing her her debut. And it's interesting, you might wonder why Victor Espinosa's on this horse, because he doesn't ride that much for Baffert these days, but he is very good friends with the owner of this horse and was instrumental in all the people who were involved in acquiring her. So that's the connection as to how Espinosa is riding here. It's through his relationship with Zidane Racing Stable. So I think she's, you know, she's very, she's been very impressive in her training, and I'm looking forward to seeing her debut tomorrow.
second-time starter for Hollendorfer and partners. Frosted Blue, this is a half-to-firing line, and Baffert has got the Stone Street homebred out of the very nice Glinda the Good, the Pioneer of the Nile filly, debuting, and also has worked hot. This is a half-to-good Magic, so a pretty fancy set of two-year-old fillies, Jay, and... it's a great weekend of racing, starting today and then going deep into Sunday night as well with the Del Mar Mile on Sunday. That came up good too. 9 o'clock post on Sunday. Mo Forza back for Barry Abrams. We're rooting for Mo Forza.
Yes, Mo Forza's back. He's see if he can pick up where you know, where he was prior to his poor performance in the Pegasus Turf Invitational. He just didn't run well that day, and he was given plenty of time off after that. But when, you know, when he's on his game, he is top class. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him back in action. And you know, I think the Galilean has certainly made himself known as. I think he's been brought along smartly this year after coming off of a lengthy layoff, and his win last time it was against Calbreds in the Cal Dream, and but he's ready for open company, and I think he's going to be very, very effective in here as well. So we've got a couple of four-year-olds by Uncle Mo that are going to be the prominent ones in that race.
Well, and I know early in the week, Jay, and you mentioned Improbable. You were relaying the workout pattern and preparations for McKinsey and Improbable, and you know, there's still a lot of big racing to come the next 2 weekends at Del Mar.
Right. I mean, I don't know that either will run at Del Mar, but they're. You know, they're training here, and I just wanted to give updates on them. You know, McKinsey that run most recently in the Met Mile, he lost a couple shoes in the race, and then he had a work that was impressive the day that they needed to enter for the Bing Crosby, so he got thrown into the Bing Crosby, but, you know, upon further review, they decided that backing all the way up to 6 furlongs wasn't really the right move for him, so he may run in the Pat O'Brien here a week from tomorrow, but more likely... Baffert told me he's going to just go to Churchill Downs and run in the Ali Sheba there, which is on September 4th. It's Oaks Day, and it's a race that he won last year when it was run in the spring of 2019, and beat Toms de Tot, among others, that day. So I think that's where he's going to end up. And Improbable is either going to run in the Awesome again or the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and that will be his lone start between the Whitney, which he won most recently, and his ultimate goal, which is obviously the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Excellent. Jay, I appreciate it. I'll also, on the California news front, direct people to Steve Anderson's piece about the approval of the schedule in the fall for Santa Anita and the prospects of a new turf shoot, which sounds cool and gives some options for some turf sprint distances. And also Aiden Butler hinting that we might come down the hill soon again, which... we would welcome eagerly. So I thought that was a lot of good positive news yesterday from Steve.
Yeah, it would be nice to have. I mean, they've been using the hill. I mean, they use it. Use it for the San Juan Capistrano. They use it for mile and a half grass races. So, you know, and it's a signature course at Del Mar at Santa Anita, and it'd be nice. Be nice if they can get back to using it after the overreaction of not using it owing to an unfortunate incident there you know, in the spring of 2019.
Exactly. Jay, great weekend. Home game continues, and we'll look forward to Thoroughbred LA tomorrow. What else you doing tomorrow on radio?
Just be talking about all the news of the past week, you know. Time matters. And big stakes races this weekend, so you know, lots of good stuff to talk about. You know, quality control, things of that nature. So yeah, be looking forward to it. And you know, talking about you know, what is considered to be a standard of excellence and what falls short. So things like that.
A valuable hint about tomorrow's Thoroughbred LA with Jay, and I'm guessing that time matters whether you're in jail or not.
It matters. So does integrity. So does accuracy.
Jay Pribman, everybody, and DRF Pribman on your Twitter dial. Jay, enjoy the weekend. Some great racing ahead, and there'll be some very interesting postscripts to it as we also keep an eye toward Derby. It's 2 weeks from Oaks today, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Jay. DRF Pribman, everybody. We'll stay right here. We've got a half an hour. We've got Hammer, and we've got Dave Grenick between now and noon. And Hammer is standing by. And good morning.
Good morning. A very serious segment with Brother Pribman this morning.
Well, I think tuning in tomorrow to Thoroughbred LA will be appointment listening to discuss the situation with the timer and it goes beyond Del Mar. Obviously, it's a widespread.
Jay and the guys do a great job with the Thoroughbred LA. Listened to very widely here, and of course Mike Wilman the next day. But Jay was very very deliberate this morning, and probably good to hear him though. We'll try and lighten it up a little bit. Still hot here, let me tell you. This is a long heat wave we've had. I think this is our ninth day. It's going to be over 100, and combined with the fires, which aren't, quote, knocking on wood, real nearby here, but the smoke is just everywhere, and it's so it's a good it's good to be inside, to tell you the truth. Which you know we get hot temperatures, but we don't get the humidity and the nasty air like this for consecutive days, but not complaining a bit, just telling it like it is. But good weekend coming up here at Del Mar, and I'm glad to see it. I was Pacific Classic, but in retrospective or looking back, it's kind of a Johnny Come Lately race, and it's on the other hand, it's hard to believe that I think this is the 30th running. One of the races that saw the first one and have seen many along the way. And for a race that's only been around 30 years, it has really made its mark. And, it shows that it's hard to believe that there wasn't a place all those years for the good horses, not only in Southern California, but some of the, you know, other horses to ship in that. And there was never a place here in the summer. And so the Pacific Classic was created in 1991, and as you remember, it came about partly because of the ACRS, the American Championship Racing Series, that was the brainchild of Barry Weisbord way back when. And I tell you, it had a great year. the idea of a league type of thing where the horses, older horses, go around the country and run and assign races, get points, and at the end, win the championship. And it worked. And 1991, I was in at Monmouth at the time, and we had the Islin was part of the race. And then I think the next race on the schedule was the Best Pal in Del Mar, and I was able to talk my way into a trip and was able to witness the first one. It was won by Best Pal, which kind of worked out with the maybes and big owners and actually part of putting the race together. So, but it's had some great history. Franco won the next four after Best Pal, which it was great. And then that next year was the race that probably put it on the map, and that was the Cigar Race where Darren Goh won it at 30, 40, 50 to 1, something like that, and defeated Cigar. And I was not there. I was still back east. But they tell me, that was the most people they ever had at Del Mar. They were all over the place. And it was a 5-6 horse field. But, of course, Cigar getting beat just turned all the attention to the Pacific Classic. And that's what put it on the map. And since then, just, you know, a list of Hall of Fame trainers and horses have won there. And as we move along, Candy Ride won. I remember that was, I think that was a four-horse field when Candy Ride won, but it didn't matter. Pleasantly Perfect, Lava Man, I mean, Richard's Kid won it a couple times. She's Game On Dude, Beholder, of course, with her super run, California Chrome. And it's kind of crazy because as trainers go, a lot of Hall of Fame trainers winning it, of course. But Franco won it four times in a row. Mandela won it two times in a row. Franco won it again two times in a row. Baffert won it two times in a row. And we're currently on a Sadler streak of winning it two times in a row. So, and not necessarily with the same horse either for these guys. So,
right.
But right? And interesting race to go back and look at some of the Shared Belief. I mean, Shared Belief won the race. I mean, just some super horses have won this race in its small span. And I remember when I first got here and started working at Del Mar in the early 2000s, I just looked back at the chart, and I remember on that day, there was one stake race, the Pacific Classic. And I remember going, come on, man, we need a day. We need to make a big day here. And you know, it wasn't a big deal out here in Southern California to have those you know, multi stake days. And coming from the east, I was pushed. We'd push it and push it, and they, you know, finally did. And over the years, and now we've got five stakes on the day, and we're sitting here talking about five stakes. And actually, when you think about it, we're talking about more of the other stakes than we are the Pacific Classic. So. Tried to bring the big days out here to California, and just glad to see it. And for years, this race was run on Sunday, and it was the reason it was on Sunday because when the race fell, that Saturday was usually Arlington Million Day, and didn't want to clash with them for headliners, and so Pacific Classic was run on Sunday, and became the Sunday feature around the country. And you
That's
know
right.
what? It's been tried over and over to try and make a Sunday into a Saturday, but you know what? It just doesn't work. I mean,
no.
It's good. And Haskell, we throw in the Haskell on Sunday because we have the Hamiltonian on Saturday. Saturday, and it's always going to be the best day, and it always will be. And no matter what you do, Sunday is still days. You know, not necessarily everybody gets up and is a track day. So anyway, small little history of the Pacific Classic. And you know, small field. I tell you what, the Costa Hironas and Brother Pete, they've been appearing on big days here the last 4 or 5 years, and Higher Power just has that pattern of, you know, running a good one and not so good one, and a good one, not so good one, and he's coming off a not so good one as you mentioned earlier, but the Mama 16th, that doesn't really hit him in the head, so not too concerned about his showing last time. He didn't finish P20 lengths. He showed a little speed, and, you know, it got beat a little bit. He'll be much tighter, much better. This was obviously the goal, basically. And so we'll see what he can do. If Maximum Security was, you know, quote, not at full strength last time, as Bob said, I'm sure that was the case. And, you know, he showed his guts and, you know, hung a nose on midcourt. But we'll see. We'll see what happens here. I think it's a little bit more interesting race than it appears. But don't be surprised if the Hironas Sadler boys sneak one in and look for that. I wanted to mention before I forgot, too, look at the card early. In the first race, there's a little unsuspecting maiden race, but in there's that horse, I think it was a sail topper at OBS in April, that Princess Noor. But not this time, so I believe Gary Young bought, but I think she's supposed to be something special. And the cat will be out of the bag, so to speak, because my cat is meowing behind me.
literally, cat out of the bag.
Yeah. Bella, what are you doing over there? So maybe remember about 2-3 weeks ago, I was asking anybody if we'd get a bet in on a Breeders' Cup race, and got no response. Well, this might have been the one we might have put a few bucks on for the Phillies, juvenile filly. So we'll see what happens today, and plenty of time to run back again. But this horse is supposed to be a runner, so tune in. And we've seen plenty of 2-year-olds, definitely at Saratoga as well. So. we'll see what happens with this one, Princess Nora the First. And one quick thing I wanted to look at real interestingly, I was going through my stuff, and I found my list of my Derby list that I always put together, as we all put together, 25, 20 horses, but it's back in April, maybe even March, but just an early list. I wanted to read off a couple names. There's some names that we haven't heard of, but this was the horses that were pointing for the Derby that was supposed to be run in May, and just hopefully some of these come back. But remember, horse Answer In. We had Basin, of course. We had Dennis's Moment. We had Governor Morris, Independence Hall, Wrecking Crew, Silver Prospector, Lynn's Map, Silver State, Liam's Lucky Charm, Digital, Nadal, Ette Indian, Charlatan, Wells Bayou, Accession. Remember all those horses?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all pointing, and we're not going to make this one. Let's hope they, I don't know where they are in their stages of comeback at all, but, I mean, there's a nice list of horses there that hopefully will make it back, if not this year, maybe into next year. So it's amazing, what we started out with, and I think only half a dozen of the ones that were on the list here actually made it to September. So kind of goofball way of looking at stuff. But what else do you want to talk about?
One of the last things I said to Jay, and I brought it up as well with Brad Free early in the show, the Steve Anderson reporting on yesterday's CHRB meeting and the dates approval process, but most notably, Rick, the opportunity, it looks like, to do, well, two things. Reincorporate races down the hill. And I lauded, of course, you teaching me how to, 15 years ago, how to look at those races, because they used to drive me crazy. I would always pick wrong. And you cured me of that. And the intrigue is the introduction of a new turf shoot into the infield, and a frankly very clever idea and innovation to provide with some different configuration opportunities, six and a half on the oval. So I thought that those were both positive developments.
Right. Well, if the hill's coming back in any shape or form, then that's it. It's just Santa Anita's signature race, and when the fans come back, and it's always you sit there and watch this. And I don't know how many times when I used to go out and just stand on the apron and watch a race, how many times someone would have a program and then I'd come up to you and go, "Where did I start this race? Well, I can't find it." And they'd point up, "See that house right there, on the yellow house right there? The guy in a swing is right next to that." And of course, at the top of the hill, right off Colorado Boulevard, and they would, swing along. There's just nothing like it. So hopefully they've paid their penalty for not running on it for whatever reason this long. But if that comes back, that's great. I did not read about the shoot. Did it talk about the shoot in the infield or the infield parking lot? Because there's been discussion. I mean, well, there's been a lot of discussion. I would like to be the model maker for a lot of the plans over the years of what was going to happen. Let me tell you, they've got a whole room on the second floor with artist renditions, shall we say. But there's been talk for years of trying to do something like that, like a one-turn mile, on a turf starting somewhere in the parking lot or somewhere out there. So that's good. Turf... Turf's taken over, and so you've got to satisfy the masses. So whatever it takes to create bigger fields, then that's good. Another thing, scheduling wise, I mean, I'm hoping. I didn't see who's applying for what, but take New York. I mean, for whatever reason, I think they're doing the right thing with Belmont taking what, 6, 7, 8, 9 days off after Saratoga, and I understand that there's underlying reasons that they want to keep the purses the same, so reduce the days a little bit. But I just think it's just so healthy. I mean, how many times have you heard me say it? But, taking a break is good for everybody. And I see Aqueduct's going to reduce a little bit this year. I don't know how their schedule is going to be next year. I'm hoping that California, you know, does the same thing, throws a couple of breaks in here. You just don't need to race 52 weeks a year. And I think it shows. I mean, Del Mar smartly, I mean, it took their own little break by running 3 days a week, but I think, you know, they were five last week, last year. And I think just dropping down to 3 days has just helped. And you can, in 2020, or you kind of have a license to kind of do something that, you wouldn't normally do, and they could have made 4 days, but I think they haven't. The entries have held up, and I think having three good days at this point is better than having, you know, four. Just to say we did four, and so hopefully, you know, maybe Santa Anita will be able to take some breaks or take a break on either side of their long, long meet, and it'll be good. But that hill deal is obviously the good news.
Very much, and. It just says construction recently began on the turf chute, which will allow races to be held at distances of 6 and 6.5 furlongs. And currently, of course, the 5.5 start on the dirt for a couple of jumps before it joins the turf course. The new chute will have start positions at 6 and 6.5 before the runners cross the main track on the first turn and join the backstretch of the turf oval.
I wonder if it's kind of like a Monmouth type deal, where it, yeah. You know, starts in the infield and just kind of swoops in. But you know what? Like I said, go for it. If that helps attract some horses out here, you know, that's what needs to happen. And you know, that's for sure. Good time to do it. 2020, get them start doing something here.
Right. Be innovative.
Like I said, just carry on. I was glad to see. I was glad to hear Bill Gallo, but not hear what he was talking about earlier in the week about Steeplechase having to, you know, having their own 2020 experience and having to kind of, you know, shut down the state program and just carry on and regroup into next year. But like I said, this is 2020. I think anything that we do on or off the track is a license to do whatever you want. Just hold up that 2020 sign. Oh, okay. I got it. Thank you. Move on. You know, wild.
Let me also slip in one thing for the weekend. And I tomorrow, yeah. If you haven't noticed, if you looked at the overnight, people may have seen it, and you might be seeing some of the Twitter activity, but I want to get a push in for Karma today, and we haven't had a visitor from Karma in a long time, but it is one of the most successful and reliable of the retirement organizations, and of course California-based. The website is karma4horses.org, and tomorrow is a Karma-thon. Several races on the card are Karma designated, and you know, Rick, for years, undoubtedly, you've had the same kind of functions, but really want to make sure that people are aware you can really help the West Coast retiree scene. The California Retirement Management Account is what Karma stands for, and it's been a invaluable and a mammoth success.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's been in business for a long time. Madeline Arbach, of Unusual Heat fame, along with Barry Avens, of course, came up with this idea for Karma out here, although there's always been places, homes for horses. It was almost like a secret. Hey, where can I take my horse? I really think that Karma, especially on the West Coast, and you know, maybe to some extent nationally, really opened up people's eyes. And that listen, we need to care for our horses after they get off the track. Not that they weren't cared for, but we need to make it more public that, and where a place somebody could actually just get on the phone and call them up and say, "Hey, I want to retire my horse. Will you take him?" "Yes, we will." And they did a great job doing that. Their funding was a little unique at the beginning, and in fact, about taking X amount of percent off of a purse. A small percentage where you had to opt out rather than opt in, and a little controversial at the time, but you know what, sometimes when you do these things, you have to just say, hey, we need the money, and you're contributing. If you don't want to contribute, go, you know, you don't have to. But they've had poker games. We have, demonstrations on the track of retired racehorses that have been turned into, you know, jumpers and show horses. And obviously this year that's not going to happen. And they come up with the Karmathon. So this is a great way to get anybody involved. So $50, $10, $5, it's a great way to feel that you're helping out. And, lots of times you always say there's a lot of people out there that would like to help, but they don't have an avenue to. Beefield Park fans, anybody, look up the Karmathon. You can do it online. You can do it. I think you can call in some places. But I'm glad you brought that up, Steve. A great place to continue. Just a great organization, and I'm quite sure that it has inspired some other groups to take on the obligation and the duty of taking care of our racehorses when they're done running.
Well, again, Karma, the number 4 horses. .org. I'll send out the links, and you'll see tomorrow a lot of activity for Karmathon 2020. And as we've done on our side of the fence here on the east, there's just not the same situation in terms of the fundraisers and the opportunities. So you've got to take it while you can. And I did a retweet, about an hour ago. And, I'm going to hit one more thing. I think we're going to have Dave Grenig join us. But I do want to mention that the chaplaincy, the Racetrack Chaplaincy of America, they have got their White Horse Awards and the two awards. There's the Community Service and there's the White Horse Award. And they're taking the nominations. And the deadline is September 14th, and I promised Umberto and the team and everybody heard me speak so often about the chaplaincy and the incredible work that they do, but tireless and anonymously and quietly on every single racetrack in the country, probably North America. I haven't thought about Canada, but I'm sure in Canada too. So for those that that have got people that in mind that are doing the kinds of things to support the community and the backstretch and the work that they do, the nominations are open for another 3 weeks or so. The White Horse Award is given to an individual or individuals who have done something heroic on behalf of humans or horses, and the Community Service Award to those that have made significant contributions to the welfare of the ministries on the racetrack. So nominations are open.
We hand that out during Breeders' Cup, and you mentioned the two keywords, anonymous and tireless, and that's what that group, the chaplaincy, does. They just on every backside in the country is are there for people in need, or they just have raised money for food and things like that. So great thing. So I'm glad you bring that up, because even more so this year, it seems like a good time to give. And I wish Jerry Lewis was around to do the Karmathon. We could really drum up some cash. But two good causes, and getting a little crazy. But it is a time. We're in August. A lot of people have gone through a lot of stuff here, and are not as fortunate as some are. And it's a good time to give. And like I said, some people just look for an avenue to give, and if we put it in front of them, hopefully they'll jump on it. So thanks for bringing both of those things up.
Not at all. Hammer, enjoy the weekend, and we'll check in next week as we get close to Derby and as the summer seasons, Ellis, Del Mar, and Saratoga wind down. We'll talk to you then.
Right, Kentucky Downs starting up next week. I'll be heading out there next week. Actually, for the horsemen listening, next Wednesday, the 26th, all the states close. So put a little plug in about that. So
good.
Get ready for the last quarter here.
Thanks. A good point. And we'll see you in Kentucky now that I think about it. That's right.
Nice. Ah, great. Good news. We'll meet halfway. That's what we're doing. We're meeting halfway.
All right. Perfect. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go. And Karma Cares on Twitter, too, if you're looking for it. Only about 5 minutes to spend with Dave Grenig, but I didn't want the weekend to get done and the preview to get done without a quick visit with Dave. DG, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Excellent. Are turf works over?
Turf works are over. That's not the reason for the delay in first post today. Just it's not because they're doing more turf works. It's, there's a technical issue with AmTote, an Irish tote service provider. So today's first post has been pushed back to 2:10 p.m. for those, so you don't have to rush off to get to the track from the 1:10 post. We're an hour behind for today's non-race card.
Well, and essentially, it gives us our first Twilight Friday card.
Exactly. That's what I said to Pat McKenna. I said, we're going to Twilight Friday today.
Exactly. Well, Dave, a couple of quick notes, quick hits coming out of last week. And, of course, Swiss Skydiver on her way to the Oaks. And the two big three-year-old weekends back-to-back came off very well. We're looking forward to a strong finish here. The four-star Dave and Diana this weekend. The two-year-olds will begin to take focus with the spinaway and hopeful ahead. Some thoughts about what went on here the last week. And also the news with the Belmont schedule announced.
I thought Swiss Skydiver was very good. She did what she was supposed to do against that field, and she won in hand enough to probably leave something in the tank for the Kentucky Oaks, which should be a fascinating showdown between her and Gamine. I know Gamine is this very fast, very brilliant filly who is going to have to prove herself at a mile and eighth. I know she finished first in a race at a mile and 16th at Oaklawn. Now she has to, you know, carry that speed down two turns. We'll see if she can do that. And I don't expect Swiss Skydiver to be too far off of her, to be honest with you. She likes to be in the game, too. So I think it's a very fascinating showdown between two very talented and accomplished fillies. Belmont. So we have a 27-day fall meet. It's going to start a little bit later than typically. We open up the Friday after Saratoga ends, which this year would have been on the 11th, I believe. We're going to start on the 18th, have mostly four-day race weeks. With the COVID, there's still the impact from COVID is going to be felt far beyond 2020. But let's deal with 2020 right now, and Belmont fall meet's going to be shortened. Stakes purses are going to take a hit. The Jockey Club Gold Cup is going to be $250,000. Aqueduct's going to have an 18-day meet with no racing on Thanksgiving, so I'll expect an invite for the from the big household for a little Thanksgiving dinner. and again, purses cut. Stakes purses, the Cigar Mile will be $250,000 on December 5th, and then they'll have to evaluate where things are for the kind of winter schedule that they'll run, which should start the week after. What else? This weekend, the Diana, Chad Brown show this weekend, perhaps, with the Diana. The four-star day is a very good race on Saturday. Chad has four, potential horses in there that, I think three of them could potentially win. And I'd like Uni a little bit. Maybe if people are sort of zigging away from Uni, maybe I'll zag back onto Uni. And then Sunday, the Diana's, I think I'm still having trouble grasping that Diana's on a Sunday. But with Rushing Fall and Sister Charlie, Starship Jubilee, and Me Mary, it's a really good foursome there. And even Call Me Love, and I guess if I ran through in Secret Message at the last minute. I wasn't aware of that until the overnight came out till after 5 o'clock yesterday. So it's a good field. We don't have many stakes this weekend, but we have two very good ones, and I'm looking forward to them. The weather should be good. The turf should be firm. Let's go.
To me, it's funny you say that in that manner. I got a kind of a kick out of the overnights and looking at the two cards. It's kind of old school Saratoga with just one major stake on a fairly tight card, not a marathon. It's the way it used to be.
Yeah, I'm not so sure the racing office got a kick out of Sunday's card, a nine-race card with only 66 horses. I'm not sure that they're jumping for joy there. It's a little disconcerting that a Sunday, I don't remember the last Sunday card in Saratoga, Sunday nine-race card in Saratoga. Not enough horses for, I'm sure, their liking, and we'll see how that impacts the betting, but it's that the feature is a very good race. See, I'd rather have a 6-horse field like that than an 8 or 9 horse field with three that are just clutter and 70 to 1
shot.
So I'm okay with that 6-horse Diana. I think it's a very, very strong race.
No, those absolutely. That is preferable. I haven't looked at. I only really pulled out. Actually, I think I pulled the maiden race. There's a maiden race. What did I do with it anyway? The action today starts an hour later, 2:10. Push everything back an hour today, folks, if you had not heard, and that'll certainly satisfy the golfers. And in fact, I'm going to meet a pair of them myself this afternoon.
I was actually hoping there was something like really interesting for the delay, like maybe Fauci was coming, the real Dr. Fauci was going to come to the races, and he just couldn't get out of like a meeting about Corona, and he had, he's going to, helicopter in, and I figured, he's going to be here to present the trophy for the race. Whether the horse named after him won it or not.
Well, Fauci, of course, part of the Skidmore field today. The third race goes off at 3:20, and the Golden Palette, Wesley Ward, heavy, three of them in here. So that's today's feature. Dave, I appreciate it. If I don't see you this afternoon, I will see you tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, and one more reminder, Remington Park kicks off tonight, 8:07 Eastern. All right, what else? That's it, right? I can slip in, let me slip this in. Bet Saratoga and Del Mar this weekend, a free $25 bet from Naira Betts to get the free $25. Sign up for Naira Betts using promo code Steve25. All right? There you go. Your first bet's free, $25. And it looks like the Empire 6 mandatory force on Sunday. So even though it's a smallish set of fields, you can go after the Empire 6. Thanks to Dave and Hammer and Jay Privman, Nick Tamaro, Scully, and Brad Free. Get you set for what it's going to be a fun weekend. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you on Monday.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.